Shooters, your preparation period has ended. With 10 rounds, load. Is the line ready? Ready on the right, ready on the left, all ready on the firing line. Fire! Yes, these are one of the commands you'll hear as you're shooting a course of fire. Also, you'll have great instruction from beginner to expert level and great history as you attend Canada's very first inaugural maple seed. Yes, the dates for that are July 25th and 26th in Bancroft, Ontario, Canada. Please join us. Hey.
Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So, without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Well, welcome to episode 38 of New Shooter Canada. This week, we have some items in the news, lots of guns, what we did in guns, and we have an interview with Sean from Carleton University. So, without delay, how about we start with Kelly this week with what we did in guns?
Hello, everyone. So, this week, I went and took advantage of the SFRC sale that was on, and we went and bought 1,000 rounds of CCI Mini-Mag. And we also bought 500 rounds of the 9mm Wolf ammunition that's made here in Kingston. And then we went to Canadian Tire, and our Canadian Tire just had a new shipment of ammo, and so we bought 250 rounds of the Agula High Velocity. So I'm going to use those at Maple Seed. I haven't been able to test them out yet. When we went to the range on Sunday, we went to the Prescott Grenville Gun Club. It's the first time that I've been there. It's a beautiful range. Incredible, actually. They have all kinds of things going on there. We weren't able to go to the range that we were looking at. So we had to actually share a range with someone, and it was actually quite good. I was able to do some handgun. Wasn't able to do the rifle, wasn't able to sight in the Agula. So we stuck with handguns. I tried out Kevin's new Glock 17, and the people that were sharing with us also had a Glock 17, so I played with that a bit. And also 1911. It was really nice. It was a stainless SAM 1911 Commander, so I played with that. The only problem with that is it had a few ejection problems. I tried out my
rubber.
I know. I tried out my Beretta, and actually feeling really comfortable with that. Got some good groupings. I did the challenge as well. I did that with the 22 because I just wanted. I did it three times, and I posted my best one. That was lots of fun. There was a girl there that was. She was actually shooting with her dad. She's about 20, and I asked her about what got her into shooting and all that, and she was saying that she was in cadets, and now she's actually in school, but she's decided to come back and do some shooting with her dad. She's been doing it for about 3 years. She hasn't been able to shoot all winter, and she's starting to get back into it. She had a CZ-75, so I was looking at that just because of the fact that it's a little bit smaller grip on it, so it'd be something that would be nice for females. And yeah, it was fun. Really, really good time at Prescott. It was a really nice club, and I think that I am really getting into the pistol side of things.
Excellent.
It was really fun. I told Kevin that I want his Glock now. the M&P 22 is something else I want as well. So he's willing to sell it to me. He told me he'd give me the girlfriend discount. He's no longer. So I said, why should I do that? I said, it's your gun. You bring it to the range, and I just borrow it.
So, exactly. What's the girlfriend discount?
I don't know. I think he's going to charge me extra.
to say another word?
Yeah. So.
And on the topic of the SFRC and Wolf ammo,
yep.
Mr. McClatchy, I'm not giving you $20.
Yeah. I posted that on their page, by the way.
If he would have listened to the Trevor, show, he would have heard about it.
Yeah. Trevor messaged me. No, I finally... something wonky with the download, and I just finally listened to it on the way home yesterday. And my girls were like, are they talking about you? Are they talking about you? Why do you owe him $20?
Well, I actually posted... like, I posted
I'm
on their page.
I'm paying him $20.
Sorry, I posted on their page that the 9mm was manufactured here in Kingston, and it's sold exclusively through SFRC. Really good, by the way. We use it. I used it on the weekend, and there was no issues with it whatsoever. And it's really shiny, so it's really cool. So I posted on their page that yeah, it's made here in Kingston, and then I said, and good luck with getting the $20 because he still owes Tom's that pack of gum. So.
You know what? Speaking of the gum, something dawned on me. He didn't get gum, but he did get a coffee out of me.
I did. I got a coffee. So
that, I had to break a 20, so I bought him a coffee.
Is it Timmy's?
Yeah.
It was McDonald's.
Oh, even better.
It was that's pretty cheap.
He probably used his free card where he gets his free coffee.
Yeah, probably.
So. No, because Wanda always steals my stickers. So.
So that's what I did in guns. I had a really good time, and I even got to post the challenge too. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. How about
you take the next one, Thomas, and then I will introduce what I did in guns. He's been awfully quiet, so he'll be the big. I'll do a big reveal.
Well, I emailed the CFO requesting my long-term ATT. Actually, I emailed the officer who sent me my short-term, and to see if it's being processed. He said, "Well, it's not on my desk. I'll ask so and so to see if she's processing it," and that was like 4 or 5 days ago, and I never heard back from them. So I still have no long-term ATT.
So thanks for nothing.
Thanks for nothing. Lots of nothing. I ordered a Vortex Spark from Williams Arms, but it's still back-ordered. And then when we did the SFRC promotion that went on their website, and lo and behold, CFRC had them in stock. So I hated to do it because I really enjoy dealing with Williams Arms, and John's, I consider John our friends, but I canceled it with John Williams because I needed it for my,
sorry.
I really need a daylight red dot for my compensated 22-45 with the muzzle brake for the charity shoot. Unfortunately, Trevor will not allow me to use this in the action pistol match, but I am planning to shoot it in the silhouette match. So I still haven't gone shooting. What I have to do, since I lent somebody my 10-22, I'm going to have to take up my Remington and resight it in to use it for the silhouette match. At least I'll have two guns to shoot at the match. But that was about it, so no shooting. But I understand you did lots of shooting, George.
Yes. If I had a drum roll sound effect, I'd play my drum roll.
He did a lot of magazine loading, I can tell you that.
And that's
magazine like nobody I've ever seen.
It's the bomb.
400 rounds.
That voice you hear is what I did in guns. If you're not on Facebook, you probably have no idea what I did, but I think everybody on Facebook land knows exactly what I did this week in guns.
You went to America.
Went to America. Did a whole lot of pew, pew, pew.
Lots of pew and blisters on the fingers from loading magazines, that's for sure.
So let me introduce you, since nobody's going to know your voice because you don't do a podcast yet. We'll have to work on that. But this is Red Ranch from Ohio. I went down to his place on the weekend, and we just shot a boatload of ammo and guns.
I don't know if it was a lot, but for sure it was easily approaching 1,000 rounds.
Well, when I was driving today, I was trying to think, and I was like, oh, it had to have been at least a couple hundred. And I'm like, oh, man, no, because, like, the AR was, what, almost 200 rounds?
Yep.
Just the AR alone, and that was the last thing we did.
Well, and it was 30 rounds every time you squeezed the trigger on that Kel-Tec. I never saw you shoot it a couple rounds and put it down. It was always fill mag, empty mag, fill mag, empty mag, fill mag, empty mag. Yep. And that's what it was good for. What a fun little toy to... Tech 9 is, that's for certain.
Oh, it was. It was a blast. And I did one other thing. And I did this for Thomas because, I know how much he is envious of Trevor, and I wanted to join that club. So I open carried in Ohio.
Not only did George open carry, but he went from I'm not real sure about this, but since I'm with Red, nobody will probably mess with me. So, okay, I'm doing it. Smile, take my picture so I can get this thing off me. He forgot he had it and was playing basketball with the kids. It really grew into his hip and became a non-essential thing, something that didn't matter anymore. And that's really what owning firearms is all about. You'd be amazed at the things you can do with a firearm on your hip that doesn't hurt a thing.
Now, did you just do that on Red's property, or did you actually go out and about in town carrying?
I was out and about.
Please don't say out and about. Sorry.
Out in the boot.
Out in the boot. I said about, not a boot.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't speak Canadian, so you're going to have to slow it down just a tad or I'll kick you in the britches.
That was a Nova Scotia thing.
Because I can't carry while we're in transport, because there's actually laws. How it works is there's just simply no laws regarding open carry at all. No prohibition, nothing for. There's just, it's a void. There's nothing there, right? But there are laws as far as carrying a firearm in a vehicle. So during transport, I had to disarm and then we put it in a case and then in the toolbox on the ATV. But when, as soon as we stopped, got to whatever location we're at, out it came, loaded, and then into the holster it went. So that was awesome. I started out with just the I think they call it Israeli carry, where there wasn't one in the chamber. And then it just kind of got eased into it that way, and that, so. And mind you, we're also in a pretty small town. Can you call it a town?
No, technically it's a village. We don't have a traffic light. We own a police cruiser, but not a police person for it.
Okay. So it's we're volunteer, safe. Just like the fire department.
Exactly.
What did you carry, George?
It was a Glock. I don't know the Glock numbers. It was the 40, the Glock.
I recently bought myself a Glock 17, which is a 9mm, and I recently acquired a new pink holster that I was planning on putting George into. But I guess my kindness got the better of me, so I put George in my brand new 17, and it seemed to suit him. It immediately picked up the smile on his face and just spread it from ear to ear.
Now, I was using, what was that holster? Serpa, right?
Yeah, that was a Serpa holster.
And outside the waistband, and it was nice. I really liked it. It was super comfortable, and the gun clicks in, so you got great retention. It was great. I really liked that holster. Now, mind you, my knowledge of holsters is limited to my cowboy holsters and a Serpa, but you know, I'm working on it.
It's a handy holster to have at the range, because reholstering is really easy. And drawing,
yeah.
It's real easy, and it's comfy. It's probably not the best for self-defense, but it's handy at the range, that's for sure.
Now, why isn't it the best for self-defense? It has the...
It's a retention holster?
Because it's plastic. Yeah. It wouldn't take much for somebody to grab the gun holster at all and rip it off your belt. I think if you're trying to either run away or maybe hurry up and get out of your car and snag the butt of the pistol on, say, the seat belt or the seat, I suspect that you'd probably break the holster away from the clip that's tucked behind your belt. So I probably wouldn't use it for self-defense, but it's nice and handy on the range.
And for Canadians when they come down to visit.
Yep, it's a spreader of smiles, a lot like the Tech 9 and the Walther PPQ we got to shoot.
Yeah. Now, when I was shooting the Glock 17, that's what I was using, was the Serpa for it as well.
So I guess we should ask Red what he did in guns this week.
Yeah.
Mostly I loaded magazines and did a lot of cleaning, and I was the tour guide, the cameraman. I did make a very poor umbrella, because I did get George and his family stuck out in the rain on the floor. I'm hoping that doesn't ruin another trip down to Redneck Ranch to hang out with us, but we had a good time. You know, the George's kids were great, and they meshed perfect with my kids, and we had a lot of fun. Got to do a hiking, a lot of some ATVing, some fishing, and of course a touch of shooting.
Yeah, I'm not welcome back for fishing because I was catching all the big ones. Red was catching the ones that my fish would eat.
Right, I caught the bait.
And then poor Em, did she catch anything? I don't think she caught anything, did she?
Nope, she caught some moss out of the bottom of the pond, and that was about it. It was kind of fun pulling up to the lake that we were fishing in. It's my my neighbor's pond. They graciously let us come up and abuse all of the fish, and we pull in the driveway, and we've got the four-wheeler and the trailer, and we pull into the yard and park. George hops out of the wagon and looks down at the ground and sees targets in the backyard of where we're fishing. And he pointed at him and said, "Red, look at that. Look, they're shooting right here."
Right off their back porch. They
Would
got
that
those,
be nice?
You know those 22 reactive targets? You shoot the targets and then you hit the reset, the reset thing? They had some of those just sitting in the lawn, just like lawn ornaments, just sitting there.
That's what they should be. They should be lawn ornaments that you can use every day.
Yeah, and you know what I said to them? I said, in Canada, this is perfectly legal. Problem is, we don't have the culture to make it normal. And like, if I owned a place out in the country and I had a decent backstop, that would be that somebody pulled up an ATV in my yard. That's exactly what they would see.
Well, when I was a kid, that you saw that when we went up to my uncle's place, everybody had ranges in their backyard. Except nowadays, they even have to be shrouded.
Yeah.
But you go up to my uncle's place and everybody hunted when I was in grade school. But nowadays it's taboo. And as soon as they hear gunfire, they call the police on you.
Yeah. Outside of the shooting, I think my second favorite part of the whole weekend was our mode of transportation.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought you were going to insult my mean wife.
No, she's a lovely woman.
His wife was your mode of transportation?
No. Yeah, he hooks the wagon up to her. Hopefully she doesn't listen to this show.
Oh, she's going to slap me if she ever sees me.
I'm sending her an invite.
It was, no, just a wagon with a bench seat from a truck?
Yeah, something out of a van somewhere along the road I picked up.
Yeah, hooked up to an ATV.
Perfect.
And that was our transportation.
Excellent.
That was awesome.
The cowboy Cadillac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Mr. Thomas, if you don't mind, I have some advice for you about that Wyatt fella you need to talk to.
He's retired.
He is retired?
There's a new left heart and power up there now. But what's your advice, Red?
He's not the fella holding up your ATT.
No, because he's gone. But I have a feeling the guy that actually turned me down last year, the actual firearms officer, he's the one that's, I think, holding me back.
Maybe just go on down there and take him a big old plate of gravy and biscuits.
Oh, yes.
And, just sit down there and eat breakfast with him, have a little chat with him. And, you know, you might have to lean on him a little bit, be nice to him, but just let him know that, you know, you get good intentions in your heart and you're a good person, and I'd be willing to bet he'd just go ahead and sign your paperwork right there.
Well, apparently he likes soup, because last year when he told me to take him to court, he suggested the Barry's Court because they have the best soup. So maybe I'll take him up a bowl of left-hearted soup or something.
There you go. An easy way to every man's heart's through the stomach, that's what I say.
Yeah, either food or alcohol. One of the two works usually.
That was my other highlight of the trip was I haven't had biscuits and gravy since I was hanging out in Michigan two and a half years ago. So we had that for Saturday breakfast, so that was delicious.
No grits. Your poor daughter wasn't sure if she even wanted one of them biscuits.
Which one, Eva or Jessica?
I think it was Eva that wasn't too convinced that biscuits were even for eating. She had to brow up and... You know, she did clean her plate after she decided to embark on that journey.
Yes, they were quite young when we were hanging out in Michigan. Because I know they've had it before. Jessica's turned into a very fussy eater, so she basically lived off of your peanut butter and jam, I think.
Now, did the 16-year-old go down with you, George?
No, she stayed in London. She stayed at my parents' place.
Okay, I figured that'd be your opportunity to get her to actually try shooting, but oh well.
Nope. So yeah, and then we played some basketball, and they had one of those twirly things, so I decided to spin the kids before the rainstorm came to see if I could get them to fly off, and they all held on nice and tight, and nobody flew off, but...
Or throw up.
So, yeah, nobody threw up,
well,
so...
That's good.
What did you think about shooting the barricade, George?
Oh, yes! That was an interesting experience.
What kind of barricade?
It's the one where it's a sheet of plywood that's kind of stepped on one side, or cut to look like steps, and then it's got the holes, the various holes, and you gotta start at the top and then shoot through each of the holes. The first time through, I think I got 3 shots on target. The next time through, I might have missed 3. I hit the target quite a bit the second time around. But yeah, you're like twisting your body in unnatural ways and you're like half crouched, half standing, and it really makes you work.
You look like a house cat fighting a possum, you know what I mean?
Yes!
That's awesome.
You see the hole and you think, alright, I'm going to get down on one knee and be lined up with this hole. So you get down on one knee and you find out you're not near the hole and you've got to do something different. And it makes you think, it makes you work. It's a fun drill, a fun exercise, and it definitely gets rid of the stand square to the target and shoot there 25 times and then reload your magazine, right? Because that's boring, right, George?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Are you going to start doing CQB then?
Oh, shoot.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, that's more IPSC.
Yeah, well, IPSC, but... Barriers, standing behind barriers, shooting left, right.
You know what? I gotta say, I think I'm catching the pistol bug. Yeah. I caught the AR bug when I shot Thomas's, and then between Michigan and now Ohio, I'm liking these semi-auto pistols.
Now your club does have an IPSC league, do they not?
Yeah, they're like raging IPSC right now.
You should go one time and just check out a match and see what kind of course of fire they set up.
I have been. They just built 2 action ranges specifically for the IPSC guys.
Excellent.
So yeah, it's huge. So I did one other thing in guns. Well, I received one thing in guns. My magazine for my ISSC that I bought from the SFRC. A lot of S's and acronyms there. came in the mail. I don't have the gun, but I've got the extra magazine.
Well, that's good. So.
Well, you're prepared.
So I am.
That's pretty fast. When did you put the order through? Last Tuesday or Wednesday?
What night did it end?
It closed on the Wednesday.
So I think I ordered it the Wednesday night before it closed.
Yeah. So I got email confirmation today that my Vortex is being shipped, so hopefully I'll get it tomorrow.
Mm.
I'm looking so that's fast.
Mm-hmm. So, did I leave anything out there, Red?
I don't think so, George. We definitely had a good time. Everybody was safe. We had a good time. The girls had fun, and we'll do it again in September. And if we get some more time somewhere in between, we might make it happen again.
That'd be fun. I like to come out. September, I'm busy. That's when I book my annual vacation. I have a cottage booked already for that weekend, so I'm out for September.
I'm on my way.
Did we mention that I open carried in Ohio?
No, but probably going to hear it for the next year.
Yes. And you looked so happy in your pictures, by the way.
You know what else I noticed about all those pictures?
What?
I got to lay off the beer.
You just noticed
holy
that now?
Holy cow. Well, no, I've always had a beer gut on me, but holy cow, I need to lose weight. So.
Yeah, but you're
thanks
smelling
for that,
ear
Red.
To ear.
Absolutely. Yep. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and dismiss myself, let you all get on with the show. Thanks for the invite and the courtesy, and I look forward to seeing some of you guys back down in Ohio in September.
Yep. Thanks for your hospitality. You and your family were just absolutely amazing.
Keep representing gun owners in a positive light.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
We will.
Yeah, thanks, Red.
This is where you hang up now, bud.
I'm waiting for the crickets. Cheeky, cheeky, cheeky. I was going to do that. I was actually going to record a cricket sound effect.
Oh, there you go.
We need to use it.
So, actually, and you know what else? Before I wrap this up real quick, I really got to give kudos to Brian Sheets from Valkyrie Defense. He's the one that's going to be, him and Jace are going to be teaching the class in September. He was loading mags as fast as I was emptying them. And he's like, here, try this one. Here, try this one. Here, try this one. Here, try this one. Oh, you got to shoot this. You got to shoot this.
So your bromance was more than you expected.
And, yeah.
Was he as cute in person as he is on...
He's absolutely adorable. he's worth all the Facebook romance jokes and all the teasing and stuff.
That was cool that he gave you some private shooters and that private lessons basically on shooting and that. So
Well, it wasn't so much. I was just asking him questions and he was more than happy to answer. But he brought out the Tech 9 and he asked if we were allowed to have them in Canada. And I was looking at it. I'm like, it fits. It would fit. Any dimensions, but I said, because it looks scary, I said, I don't know. Is the Tech 9 banned in Canada?
I don't know. I've never seen one. I would assume probably is.
It's big enough to be legal in Canada, but it's scary enough to be banned in Canada.
I think the Tech 9 is actually technically a machine gun, is it not? You might have had to
say that. Oh, you know what? Brian did say that. He did mention that it probably wouldn't be allowed because it was either Brian or Red, one of the two, had mentioned that it's easily convertible to full auto. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's definitely got to be banned then. That's right, too.
If it has a fun switch and it's fun, it's banned.
Well, his was just straight semi-automatic. But he's got a friend. He's got a friend that's got a... I can't remember what the class license is. But this license allows full autos. So he wasn't able to make arrangements to have his buddy come out. But so hopefully in a future trip to Ohio, I may have some fun switch guns to shoot.
That would be nice. The only time I've ever had a fun switch was when I was in the cadets when I was like 15. And we got to shoot one of the FNs. I think it just had three round bursts. I don't remember if it actually had a full selector switch, but I remember shooting those things, and as soon as you pull the trigger, it just climbs.
So.
I'm just looking to see if it is.
I'm pretty sure it'd be prohib.
It is.
If it's available in full auto.
Just pulling it up here. It is.
Yeah, that sucks, because it was a fun gun.
Both hands on the gun, though. I'm not taking pictures as you're shooting it.
Hey, I went all gangster. Like, Kevin... If you're going to go gangster, you got to go gangster with a Tech 9. Like, that just screams gangster. Just saying, you know.
You needed your colors.
Red had a 30-round Glock mag, so he did a mag dump with a 30-round Glock mag, so that was cool.
I don't think he understood what the color comment was. He probably had a bandana swinging off his back of his back pocket or something.
Gang colors. I'm not completely obtuse.
Shades on. You got your grill on.
Lots of blame.
I was videoing myself loading the P mags, and then Red starts laughing at me, and he's like, "Are you seriously videoing yourself loading mags?" Maybe a little.
It sounds like a great time. I wish Kelly and I could have gone down.
So. Yeah. Well, Kelly will be going down in September.
Yep.
That gets
me, Brian, in person. Woohoo!
You're not allowed to pick him up and throw him. He doesn't like that.
I will be able to stand beside him.
You're gonna towel awesome. Over him.
After we were done with all the shooting, we went back and I was having a drink, having a beer in the garage, and three of us were just sitting around and just shooting the breeze. It was like we'd been friends forever. Yeah. It was so cool.
It's funny how that happens, eh?
Good people. So
yeah, it was like that in Michigan. It was like a lot of long lost friends that hadn't seen each other for years, and everything just gelled when everybody got together.
Yep. My dad, when I was showing my dad last night the videos, I had to pick my dog up, so I was showing my dad some of the videos and that, and he's like, I don't get why you don't just move down there. He was like, you know so many people down there, and like you come back glowing whenever you come back from the States. He goes, well, I don't understand why you don't just move down there. So then when I was talking to Wanda last night, I said, any chance of moving to the States? Nope. We got grandbabies coming soon, and I'm not moving away from grandbabies. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So, unfortunately, because there, when I was dating that American girl, that was part of my 10-year plan. Once Jessica turned 18, I was going to start the immigration papers.
Michigan's not that far.
Nope.
Over the border.
I'd love to move to the States.
It's only an hour away from me.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, let's move on, because I think that took about a half hour, and we still have a fair bit of show to go through.
It's going to be a long one tonight.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
You want Kelly to go into story two, and then we'll go back to story one with you? Give yourself a break, let your windpipe slow down?
Well, no, story one's pretty quick.
Okay.
I can breeze through this quick. Story one is more of just kind of a NFA update. The NFA was going to have, sorry, I just lost my spot. The NFA was going to have a director's teleconference meeting that was scheduled for June 11th, and it was essentially going to be a reverse coup. From what I understand, that Sheldon was going to try to attempt to remove the directors. The agenda is, I'll just go through this kind of quick here, was basically to welcome the new directors, previous minutes, brief financial update, some other various things, and then when you go down to the last item, expulsion of members acting against the interests of the NFA, and essentially the directors that are kind of opposed to Sheldon read that line and went, I think that's going to be aimed at us. So they were able to kind of get a court injunction, so to speak, an emergency court date, which they asked for because basically they interpreted the last line as a direct threat against them being terminated,
yep.
Which they achieved. So the drama continues, unfortunately.
Well, it looks like he already had, three other directors already lined up to replace the people that he wanted to get rid of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Sean Bevins has been posting stuff up on Facebook, and he's got litigation started against the NFA and Sheldon. And so it doesn't look like this is going to end anytime soon.
You know, if Lord Sheldon would just step down, all this would stop and go away.
Well, something was interesting. I was reading through some of the stuff that Sean had posted up, some of the court documents that he's submitted, or he served Sheldon and them with. And one of the accusations is that there hasn't been a proper audit, financial audit done in like 5 years.
Yeah.
No, and there wasn't one. So at the, when I was at one of the meetings that was held here in Kingston, that's one of the questions that I asked. Has there been a proper audit done? And there hasn't been, or according to the directors, there hasn't been one done. That's why they were asking for KPMG to come in and do one. Mm-hmm. Also because of the fact that it was being read at the AGM. It's not an official audit. There's certain, for nonprofits, they are required by law to have the audits done, so that the government can come in and look at the paperwork and that, and so you can maintain your nonprofit status, right? There hasn't been anything done, or not.
Yeah,
they could lose your status then.
With our club, they're not a charity, but I think they're not for profit.
Right.
They're not a business. I think they're not for profit. And at the AGM, they have an actual financial group,
mm-hmm.
an independent group,
mm-hmm.
that does a complete audit, mm-hmm. of their books and all their assets and everything.
And they're supposed to. If you're over $1 million, you actually need an outside auditor to come in and do it. You can do one in-house if you're under $1 million. The NFA is over $1 million.
Yeah. So this is my own speculation, so I'm going to tread softly, because I don't want to get sued.
Well, you're saying it's your speculation, so.
It's beginning to appear to me that there may be some nefarious stuff that people don't want exposed.
Well, I think that the accusations were lobbied from Sheldon's side against Sean Bevans. We heard those rumors and that. If there's an audit, that would actually clear up any of that. But also, if an audit is there, it can also show what Sheldon's been doing with the money in that as well, right? But right now, one of the questions that I asked was, the NFA right now is in litigation with almost everyone. So a lot of the money that's being, our dues and that, and I did join, but the dues that are being used for litigation against everyone. And there's better ways to spend that money. Yeah, Sheldon, he's aware that the majority of the membership is not happy. If he was doing the right thing and was caring about the NFA, he would step down, and agree to some of the terms that they're asking for, like, for example, a full audit. Not just him, but also Sean and the rest of the directors and what, and also look into what they've been doing and if it's something that the NFA is supportive of the NFA as opposed to being harmful, right?
Yeah. One thing you have to realize that everybody is a volunteer except for Sean Bevans. He was the only paid member. He was a registered paid lobbyist.
Right.
Actually, I think he was the only registered paid lobbyist in Canada. And now that he's out of the picture, there is no lobbyist. The only person we have representing us right now is the CSSA, and they're not technically a paid lobbyist.
No.
So all the money's going, like all the money is, like you said, he's paying for all the lawyers to go after the directors. Every cent that's going in the FA is Sheldon's using to fight his own members, which is ridiculous.
Well, it's not every cent, but it is a good chunk of it.
A fair chunk,
so, yeah. Yeah. So is that something that you want to do with, like, the right thing would be to actually step down, have a fair election, set things back up again. But, hey, if that's what he wants to do, that's what he wants to do.
I think your suggestion last week was good. We should join the NFA and get our votes in there, and then we can actually have a say in what happens.
Now, do we know if he's up for re-election this time around?
In November?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe so. I believe it was only half of the directors that were up, and it's not him.
So
that's why
the vote in November is kind of pointless, because you can't vote him out because he's not up for re-election then.
Well, that's why they're trying to actually get everybody to go onto their site, and the Fix the NFA site, and actually
get the 5%.
Got the 5%, and then they can and try and force a vote. I think the timeline, they needed 21 days to respond. We're almost at that point because they were hoping for, I think, July 25th, I think it was, that they were hoping for a vote.
Well, let's see if we can get some more information for next week's show to see how the petition's going for the 5%.
We should actually ask if he's up for election in November for sure or not. Just clarify that. Okay.
Okay. So, story two.
So we heard some sad news today. Colts. Yes. Gunmaker Colt Defense has said that it's actually filing for Chapter 11, so bankruptcy protection.
Thomas, you gotta stop getting credit cards in your dog's name.
He only has five.
And you're gonna have to actually change his name now. Oh, poor Colt. Anyways.
Colt Canada.
Right, Colt Canada. So, I'll just go through the story here. So this is in the Wall Street Journal. Gunmaker Colt Defense said late Sunday it is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, basically court protection, amid business execution issues and a heavy debt burden. The company has secured $20 million in financing from its existing senior lenders to continue operating while in bankruptcy and expects to remain in business after the restructuring. The West Hartford, Connecticut company, with a legacy dating to 19th century New England, developed a pistol it called the Gun That Won the West and enjoyed a lucrative stretch in the late 1990s and early 2000s as a supplier for U.S. military of the M9 line. The M4 line of firearms widely used by the frontline troops. But Colt has struggled in recent years with supply chain and working capital issues, a slowdown in rifle sales, and its 2013 loss of key contract to supply the U.S. Army with the M4. As a result, some of the its operational issues, the company had accounting problems that caused accounting problems. They didn't have KPMG in there to do the audits. that caused it to revise prior year's reported financial results and missed a creditor's initial filing deadline for an annual report. Ooh, that's not good. According to the regulatory filings, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Colt plans to try and reduce its $355 million debt burden via a court-supervised auction of its business to generate proceeds to repay some of its lenders. Basically, what that's saying is they're going to try and pay off their lenders. They're going to try and look at selling the company, and they're going to try and restructure so that they can actually continue to be in business. Because it would be sad if they folded because of the fact that they're one of the oldest gun makers in the world, are they not?
I'd hate to see them go.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with Colt over the years has been that it was more or less a boutique shopping for the American Armed Forces, and they tended to ignore their commercial or the private sector sales, because it's been very hard to get any Colt product up here at all. Their whole business was focused on the U.S. Army, and they didn't really do a lot of commercial sales, and I think that really hit them hard when they lost their contract.
Right. Today was the deadline for them to actually come up with basically money to pay their creditors. So they weren't able to make the deadline today. So they basically announced that they are going into Chapter 11 protection. So sad, because of the fact that there's such history with them and that. So
somebody will buy up the name and continue on making Colt's products. That's the way it is, right? Like,
and they make the 1911, the original John Browning design.
It's Colt. I don't think we'll ever see the Colt brand disappear. It just won't be an independent company. It'll be a subsidiary of somebody else, right?
Yeah, somebody will pick up the name.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they don't move it to overseas or something.
Well, that would just kill it.
Because Colt's synonymous with America, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
hopefully it's pronounced America.
America.
Yeah, I forgot.
America.
Drop the A. America. But it is. Yeah.
Well, listen, there's some good stuff in the gun news, though.
Okay. Oh, do tell.
Yes.
Well, you know how
we're the kings of segues.
A lot of competition shooters, especially IPSC, that use the 5-inch revolvers, they like the Smith & Wesson 625. It's great because it's got moon clips. You don't have to use the speed loaders. It's faster load, faster unload. You don't have to pick up your brass that's dropped on the ground. Well, the problem is Smith & Wesson stopped making the 5-inch version a couple of years ago, and all they're making now is the 4-inch Jerry Mitchell-like version from the customer shop. I've heard rumors that they're supposed to be putting out a Canadianized version or a 5-inch version, but it's never happened. But Ruger has jumped on the bandwagon, and they now have a new Ruger Redhawk. It's now a convertible. It shoots 45 auto, 45 Colt, and it has the moon clip. So, and it's Canadianized. It's a 4.2-inch barrel. So all you action shooter pistol shooters who like revolvers, you now have a Canadianized revolver that can use. The all-new Ruger Redhawk, as I said, is chambered both 45 and 45 Colt. It features a round butt frame, hardwood checkered grip, and has a 4.2-inch half-lug barrel, so you've got a little bit of weight under the back. It's fully adjustable rear sights, and it comes with 3 moon clips. Really good for reloading. The thing I like about the Redhawk is compared to the Smith & Wesson, whether you got the square frame or the round frame, the Smith & Wesson grip was so big and the grips were so far forward, when you opened up the cylinder to eject the fired rounds, your moon clip and your rounds were actually hitting the grip. Well, with the Ruger, your grip set further back. So when you pop open that cylinder, you've got nothing to get in the way, and those rounds will just fall to the ground. right now, I think the retail price I saw on this thing is over $1,000. So it's not going to be cheap. But if you're looking for a revolver for action pistol, Ruger now has a Canadian version that you can shoot your moon clips out of. So I haven't seen one up here yet. And they just actually announced this. I just got an email today. So maybe probably a year before we see this in the Canadian market. But I'm really looking forward. I was looking at the Ruger Redhawk and 44 Magnum. But I've had enough with 44s. But the 45 I'd be really interested in picking up. So
now what's the difference? I don't get. I've never really shot a 44, so this is coming from a half ignorant standpoint. But I don't understand what the difference between a 45 and a 44 is. Like they're essentially eighth of an inch difference in diameter.
Well, cartridge wise, what it is like a pistol or a semi-auto pistol doesn't have a rim like your 45 Colt does. So it's designed to have an extractor groove go into it. So you could put, say, normally, a 45 ACP will fit into the cylinder of a 45 Colt, but when you fire it, the casing is going to get knocked into the chamber. Then you're going to be knocking out with a dowel rod. So what they do is you actually put your rounds on a metal clip. So when you fire it, it stays on the outside of the cylinder.
Like the sorry. I'm just talking specifically about the round. The 44 Magnum and the 45, I don't get what the difference is. Is it just a matter of more powder in the
44? Well, I have a lot more powder.
Yeah.
44 is a big, long case.
That was the next question. Is the casing, because the 45 Colt's a pretty long case.
Well, the only difference is going to be, because your 45 Colt is a longer case, your bullets can have a little bit further distance to go through the chamber to jump into the forcing cone. The Red Hawk is synonymous with the 44 Magnum. It's like the Smith & Wesson Model 29. The Ruger came out with the Red Hawk, and then they came out with the Super Red Hawk, which is a bigger format. This gun here is a Red Hawk, but this version is only a 45, not a 44. It's the same frame. Right. Everything is the same size. But this one only shoots 45 Colt and 45 Auto.
Okay, but I'm still talking about the cartridge, not the gun. The casing on the 44, is it longer than the 45 Colt?
The 44 is actually would be a smaller diameter because it's a 4.44.
No, I'm talking about the length.
It's a hell of a lot longer. Yeah.
Is it? Okay. That clears up my.
Because
I know I've heard that I can load my 45s to a 44 Magnum. So I've always wondered, if I can load up to a 44, why can't, what's the point of having a 44?
Well, what powder do you use for your 45?
700X.
Okay, well, on my 45, for example, I think I was putting 5.1 of 231 in it. For the 44, it holds 11 grains. It's double the powder charge in the 44.
Okay. That makes sense. So I've never held a 44. I've never seen a 44. So I don't know what I never understood. The 45 is fractionally bigger than the 44, so why bother with a 44? But there is a significant.
Well, the 45 Colt is an older round. The 44 Magnum actually came out because of Elmer Keith back in the 40s or 50s, I believe. He was experimenting with he was using really high-powered 44 special loads, and he was the one that actually got Smith & Wesson to Smith & Wesson made the gun, and Remington made the round, but it was because of Elmer Keith hot-loading the 44 Special that we have the 44 Magnum today.
Gotcha. And you know what else I just realized? I forgot to bring up a 45 Colt to give to Trevor. I was going to drop that off when I was up the other
weekend. He doesn't have a 45 Colt?
Last weekend. Doesn't have 45 Colt. I forgot to... I was going to load one up when I dropped the dog off last weekend, and totally forgot. So all my reloading stuff's up in my dad's garage. Totally forgot.
The thing I like about this type of gun, too, is that if you shoot a 1911, you can use the same ammo in both your guns. So when I had my 625, I would shoot the exact same. I didn't have to load two different rounds for two different guns. Because usually with the revolver, you can put it a little bit hotter because it's a much stronger action. Like you couldn't put a super, super hot load through a 45 without damaging it. But the revolver's a lot stronger. It could take a higher pressure cartridge. But I would just load the same round and I would shoot. I didn't have to worry about loading different rounds for the revolver or different rounds for the pistol. I would just make a round that functioned both equally in both guns. And I just load for the same. But I'm seriously looking at this because I sold my 625 last year or 2 years ago, and I really regret it.
Now, what's your range hand? Is that a 44?
That's a 44.
Is that the last 44 you have?
No, I have another one. I have a Marlin 1894 and 44.
Look at you with the cowboy guns.
I don't enjoy it. I've had 1, 2, 3 Model 29s over the years. I like the gun, but you shoot I don't like dropping the loads on them. If I'm going to shoot light loads, I'd get a 44 Special. I like the gun, but you start shooting a couple hundred rounds of 44 Magnum in a revolver, it's just way too much. Even my ranch hand, it's brutal in the ranch hand.
I load 5.5 grains into my 45s, and it's jumpy. So I could just imagine if you were to double that into a 44.
It's peppy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it's a great hunting round. That's the advantage of a 44. Like, you can use it for deer.
Which doesn't really do us much good in Canada.
Well, no, this is my 1894. I bought some of those Hornaday Lever Revolution bullets, whatever they're called. And benching it at 100 yards with a red dot, those stupid things were cloverleafy. So you can get some accurate loads in a 44. And in a rifle, it's mild. Like in the 1894, it's nothing. It's nothing worse than, say, a 270.
When I put my 45s through my U-Birdie, my 1872, it's like shooting a 22. It's just like nothing. It's just pop, 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 pop.
Yeah, but you're using light cowboy loads, all right?
No, I'm loading to a standard Lyman reloading book. I don't download my 45.
I've never shot a 45 Colt.
Really?
Yeah, I've never. It's one round I've never fired.
See, I'll have to load some up and bring some over.
Well, there you go. So, while you guys were talking about that, I went online and I got a picture for you there and I posted it for you.
Oh, excellent. So you can see...
You can see the differences.
So, they're the same size. The 44, the casing for the 44 is the same as the 45.
Actually, the 45 looks longer, but the 45 is originally a black powder round, is it not?
Probably, because it's from the 1800s. Yeah. When did Smokeless come out? Around the 1900s, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you're actually really originally designed for the black powder round, where the 44 was designed for the smokeless powder. Yeah. Maybe you should get somebody on the show that can tell us the difference between the 45 and the 44. It actually reloads them and shoots them.
Yeah. I don't know what powder, just because I'm sure we'll be getting messages tomorrow morning about my comment about loading a 45 up. I don't know what powder specifically. I've just heard that it's... You can load a 45 up to the ballistics of a 44, but I don't know what powder. Like, I use 75X or 700X. It's shotgun dirty powder, but it was like 5 grains for my rounds, whereas the rest of some of them were like 9, 11 grains, and I'm like, let's go with the 5. That way I use less grains and still get my bang, right?
Well, maybe have a look at my Winchester book to see what they actually rate these things at for the different powders and different charge weights. What's the bullet weight in your 45? How many grains is your projectile?
I'm using, I think, 200s right now. But you can get them up to 250, 255.
Yeah, I think the same with the 44. Normally they're 240, but I think you can get them bigger. You just have to seat the case further, the bullet further in the case if you're using the longer bullets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like this is kind of, this is what my question is, why 44 versus 45? Like, what do you get out of the 44 that you can't get out of the 45?
I don't know, because I'm not familiar with the 45. I just know it's an older round and it's a black powder round, so.
And I know nothing about the 44. I've never touched one, seen one, fondled one, stroked one.
But you want to. I'll bring up my ranch hand. You'll love it in the 44.
Yeah, well, the ranch hand in the 40, in my 45 is pretty peppy, so I can imagine. All right, so
next we have an interview.
That we do. So I will put it in right now, and then we'll come back and we will close out the show. We have a listener email, which will be kind of interesting. So enjoy the interview, and we will be back right after this.
So the main topic tonight we're going to cover is talking to the Carleton University Firearms Association, or the CFA, as they like to be called. Past president, Sean Humphreys, is with us. He's now the captain of the Trap and Skeet Shoot team. So, hi, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, can you give us a little bit of a history about the CFA?
Yeah, for sure. So, the Carlton Farms Association was started in 2010 by my good friend Brendan Wallingford. At the time, there was no firearms associations of its type in Canada. A lot of people remember back in the 1950s to 60s, you know, there would be shooting teams at different schools. Yeah. Unfortunately, that kind of went by the wayside. So this is kind of the first association of its type in more modern times.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of shooting in the schools these days. I know in a lot of the older high schools in Toronto, there are still rifle ranges down in the basements.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Central Tech, my old high school, there was an actual range in the basement. Port Perry, just north of me, their high school has a range in the basement. And until about 4 or 5 years ago, Hart House at UFT actually had a shooting club and a shooting team, and that got shut down from because of an incident that happened. So it's nice to see that another university is starting up a shooting league. So what prompted you to start the shooting at the university, Sean?
Well, again, it was my friend Brian Wallingford that started off. And that was in 2010. So he was president until 2013 when I took over from 2013 to 15. So I think what Brandon's goal was to bring shooting awareness back into schools, a positive shooting awareness. Obviously, Carleton is a very liberal school. It's in the nation's capital, so there's a lot of political activity. And it was an interesting choice for that school. But what we've seen is that it's only grown. It's gotten very popular, and we've now seen other schools kind of take our example. University of Calgary being a notable one. So I think there's now 6 university clubs in Canada, and they're all, we're happy to say, kind of based off of our club.
Excellent. Now, do any of them actually have their own ranges on campus, or do they have to use an outside facility?
None of us have ranges on campus, unfortunately. So all of us use, to my knowledge, ranges in the outlying community.
Okay. What are the 6 different universities that have clubs?
So the University of Calgary is the kind of the main one. They started a couple of years ago. Lethbridge, and I should have made notes before I came here because I'm forgetting. I only know the acronyms of some of the others, so... they're mostly in Alberta. There's now one in the East Coast, though. We are excited, though, to announce that we are helping the University of Ottawa to start their own program.
Excellent.
That's good.
It's going to be, I think, a challenge. University of Ottawa has probably even less openness to this sort of thing than Carleton, but I think we have a good shot there.
Excellent. Okay. So you guys have to use a range outside, of course, the campus. So what range do you guys operate out of?
So we have we've always gone out to Stittsville Shooting Range. Stittsville is just outside of Ottawa, and they've always been really good to us. We get a bit of a discount to go out as a club, and they have really nice facilities there. They have handgun ranges, rifle, and shotgun ranges. So, yeah, it's worked out very well for our club.
So you've gotten to develop a lot of different disciplines then with the group now that you have access to all the different disciplines.
Definitely, yeah. People are given exposure to kind of the 3 main disciplines being, of course, handgun, rifle, and shotgun.
What tends to be the most popular discipline for the new shooters?
It varies, but I would say, honestly, handguns and military-style rifles.
Yeah.
Now, you also mentioned before the show that they're actually doing a trap team now, and that you're the president of the trap team, or should I say skeets?
Yeah, so the trap and skeet team. We're hopefully launching this. Well, we are launching this month. It's going to be officially launched and training will begin. We probably have, I think, 10 people that are going to be starting with it, so it's a good turnout for that. There are no current shooting teams at Canadian universities, so we're pretty happy to be kind of laying the groundwork for this also. There is a strong presence of shooting teams down in the States. Last time I checked, I think there's over 200 trap and skeet teams at American universities. So we're reaching out to our counterparts down there and getting some advice from them. But yeah, this year we're going to be just training. Hopefully next year we'll have some other competition from other schools because our own Carleton Ravens have even mentioned they are interested in us going varsity when we have the opportunity. So
yeah.
That would be excellent.
Yeah.
That'd be really good.
So maybe some of the other schools that have followed your lead on the other disciplines will take this up too.
Definitely, and I know more locally, you Ottawa is interested in something like that. So,
yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
So, you know, from some of the articles I've read in some of the gun magazines, it's really popular in the universities in the state, the shotgunners. There's quite a few leagues out there.
Definitely, yeah. It's actually quite the movement when you look at it. Like I said, I looked it up a couple weeks ago, and I think there's now over 200 teams, and they're well organized. They're very popular. You look at the rosters on some of their websites, and they have some of them dozens of shooters. And it's not just smaller, you know, more independent schools. It's schools such as even Yale have their own shooting team that goes back to the 1800s.
Well, that's excellent. It's great. Can you tell us what age range you have for students right now? It's students, or is there also faculty as well?
Mostly students, but we have had faculty come out, as well as faculty from the University of Ottawa and students.
Mm-hmm.
So the typical age range is your typical student. I would say it ranges anywhere from 18 to 24, 25. That's kind of the norm.
Okay. But sorry, Tom.
You say you have graduate students actually that still are part of the of CFU, and they return after they graduate to still shoot?
Definitely. So we have grad students. Carleton has a PhD program, so we do have some of them coming out too. So that does bump the age range up even to around 30, early 30s. And we do see people that have graduated but still stay in Ottawa. I know quite a few people that have graduated, you know, they're from Southern Ontario or whatnot, but they'll settle in Ottawa, and they still come out by membership and be part of the club.
Well, that's good to hear. You're still getting support by graduation.
Yeah, for sure.
How much is the membership?
Membership, we're kind of reviewing that aspect, but last year it was $20 for a year membership.
Okay, so it's reasonable.
Yeah, it's a reasonable cost, and it would give you some perks that only members would get, reduce range cost. We'd have a couple of member-only events, stuff like that. So,
okay.
So you have to pay for each trip to the range? Like, the membership's just for the association, but then you still have your separate range fees when you go to the range?
For sure. Like I said, they're pretty reasonable at the range for range fees, but we still do have them. And then we do provide all the firearms and ammunition for people to use, so they don't have to have a license to come out and try it.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, so different executives, we have our personal firearms, we'll bring them out. And actually, last year we just started a kind of a new ammo distribution program, if you will. So we have Ziploc bags, and you have X number of rounds per gun, and it's an easy way for us to keep track, an easy way for people to kind of carry it around the range. So
that way you can keep track of the ammo that's given to people that don't actually have licenses. You know, you've got a baggie full of 100 rounds. And
definitely, yeah.
And what kind of,
obviously, they can't bring it home with them, right, unless they're licensed. So.
No, no. And they try.
They do sometimes.
Yeah, I've had people that I've taken, I'll let them take the empty brass home, but they want to take a live round home. I said, nope, sorry, that I can't let you do. Let's see, the ratio, male to female, do you have a lot of women interested in learning about shooting sports?
We do, actually. We do have quite a few girls that have been coming out. It only grows every year. So I would say membership wise last year we didn't quite hit 50-50 ratio, but the number of girls involved is significant. On executive last year I think we had about a dozen execs. I think five or six of them were girls.
Good. So, very good.
But almost half, and it's creeping up.
Definitely, yeah.
It's getting better. It's getting better.
Yeah. For sure.
So what type of, what's the most popular? Is it rimfire, centerfire, pistols, and rifles? You said that there were military style or pistols, but what types are they using?
So the most popular pistol, starting with pistols, is probably the Glock. The reason being, I think, partly is they're very, very recognizable thanks to movies, TV shows. So the Glock is a very common gun. You hear about it in the news. So there's that. Also, the nice thing is they are easy to train people on. So that is a popular thing for them. 22 pistols are always popular. You get to have a pistol feel, but you get to have low recoil, which is desirable for some. The most popular rifle, I would say hands down, is the AR-15.
Yeah.
People like it. It's got enough, you know, noise and bang to actually feel like you're shooting a real rifle, but at the same time, It's low recoil. The collapsible stock is nice for different size shooters. And it's got that cool factor, right?
Movies, oh, yeah.
Video games, whatever.
You can bling it up.
Exactly. So another gun that gets a lot of attention is the M14. So like the Norinco M14. People tend to like that. It's kind of got a classic look, but it's still a black rifle. It's still a battle rifle, and people like that.
They tend to be the Honda Civics of the firearm industry because there's so many aftermarket parts available these days for the AR and the M14. So they're very popular with new shooters.
For sure.
And you can get a Nork for $750, $700. You can get the M14 for $5.5. So for a new shooter, especially a student, those are good cheap options for them.
No, definitely. Of course, we see quite a few SKSs on the range.
Oh, yeah.
They are affordable, and I've seen the occasional Norinco, but most guys are running the Russian model. But yeah, we see quite a few of those, and they're quite popular, too. People do recognize them, and they're fun to shoot. So.
You're cheap. Cabela's or Bass Pro has them on sale for $199 right now.
Something like that, yeah. They're really holding their price nicely. It's good.
Mm. Do you guys have any... So you're strictly geared towards the students. So do you have any type of programs, maybe a youth program trying to introduce younger people into the sport? Or is it just geared towards the university crowd right now?
You know, it's something we've been talking about. I know down the States, when you look at shooting teams, they do partner with groups in the community to help almost like a 4-H for guns, if you will.
Right.
So teaming up with high schools, because quite a few high schools have their shooting teams down the States too. So we haven't done that a whole lot. On the flip side, we're not, as I've already mentioned, we're not super strict about who can join. We have had faculty come out. We've had parents of students come out. We've had younger siblings of students come out. So I think probably the youngest person we've had at the range is maybe 10 or 11. It's not advertised, but it's something we are looking into.
Okay.
So, publicity. What type of publicity have you had in regards to spreading the word about the club? What about response from the media or public response to having the club as well?
Yeah, we had some initial media coverage when the club was started in 2010. So I think from 2010 to 2012, somewhere in there was a few articles. I can't remember which news sources. It was before I was at school there. Any media coverage has basically been positive.
That's good.
We've had any campus coverage by our campus paper has been fine. Trying to think right now. Most of the kind of social media is big for us. Obviously, we're a university club. Most students are on social media. So I think, Thomas, you might even follow us on Facebook on our main page.
I do. I do. I've followed you guys since for a couple of years now.
Yeah, nice. Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. It's a good page. I like what you guys are doing, so I try to promote it if I can.
No, we definitely try to post, upcoming events, gun pictures, relevant news, whatever. So our Facebook and Twitter, which is linked to that, has been kind of a big thing for us. And the nice thing is we've been able to reach out into the gun community in Canada, whether it be NFA members, CSSA members, Gun Owners of Canada. They all comment, share, and really up the viewership of our posts. So it's really good that way.
We'll put a link on our page for you, both the Facebook and the Twitter.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, we'll do that for you. So so no negative response. Been pretty pretty positive, both from media and the public and that as well.
No, it's all been pretty positive, yeah.
Have you guys held any mini open houses to attract the community to come check you out, or?
Well, what we've done in Carleton, we have what we call Club Expo every September.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity for all the clubs to have a table and to promote themselves in the field house on campus. Carleton is, I would dare say, one of the better schools when it comes to club involvement in Canada. I think we have right around 200 student-run clubs now.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. It's quite a range of people. Obviously, we're one of the cooler clubs, but there's a lot of great clubs.
Yes, you are.
Definitely the coolest club on campus.
So we do obviously do a lot of of outreach, whether by postering or social media, before Club Expo. I think last year we got several hundred signatures of interested students at our table. As well, there's clubs weeks, at least one per semester. You're able to set up in the University Center. We have our main atrium, we call it. It's a big, wide open space where it's kind of a lot of students walk through there during the day, so we get a lot more exposure there. As well, we have our kind of regular meetings that students are invited to, whether you're a member or not. And of course, all the range events are open to both members and non-members of the club. So I would say our exposure is really good when it comes to reaching out to students.
Okay. What about, do you have any thing for, I know Thomas was talking to you about disabled shooters, if they're able to come out, and do you have the facilities for that, or?
Yeah, we, so myself, I am a shooter with a disability. I use a manual wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Our range that we go to has been quite accommodating for myself, and even better, they kind of have a gun shop in a clubhouse kind of joined together, and the clubhouse is being rebuilt this year, so it's going to be very accessible now. It is open for students with disabilities. Trying to think. We haven't had a student with a disability come out yet. However, I am talking to a couple people right now, and we are trying to arrange accessible transport through city transport.
So has the range itself gone through the Trillium Foundation to make the facilities more accessible? Or
they have not. The reason they are rebuilding this part of the clubhouse, which will become fully accessible as per city code, is because the old building was from, I think, the 60s, and it was getting run down, and it was needing to be rebuilt. So it needed an update. So they are, as far as I know, are just doing it themselves. They're not going through any sort of a grant.
A lot of clubs don't like doing that, just for the simple fact that you have to open up your books and you're subjected to the government. You've got so many
scrutiny.
Guidelines. Yeah, that's exactly
right.
Government scrutiny. They don't want to do it. So if they're doing it on their own, that's excellent to hear. Now, that's the indoor range I'm assuming you're talking about, that they're making accessible?
No, this is the clubhouse, so it's more like the social kind of meeting area.
Okay.
Which is attached to they have a full gun shop there. And I will mention, this club is it's actually a privately owned family-run business. So it's actually not like a kind of a traditional shooting club where, you know, members are the owners.
Oh, that's different.
It is. It is different that way. It is a private company. So
That's only the second one I've heard of in the province is like that. I know.
Yeah, there's
Sports
not very
many. Is privately owned, and then so that is privately owned now. So what about the actual handgun range? You don't have any issues with accessibility using the actual range itself?
No. They have three or four handgun ranges. One is mostly reserved for military or police members. And then there's two main open handgun ranges where I've actually personally shot IDPA on a competitive level.
Excellent.
I never placed first, but I never placed last either. So, I think that's okay.
I think it's damn excellent in a chair physics.
Yeah. So those two ranges where we usually have those are quite open. They have about a 50-yard range, so you can move around a little bit. And then there's a final handgun range that has a roof over top of it and kind of a table, more of a traditional kind of bullseye type setting, if you will. They're all pretty accessible that way. The rifle ranges is some of them are kind of traditional benches that are fixed, and then there are some that have removable benches, so they're accessible that way.
Beautiful, okay. Beautiful. Now, the trap and skeet pads, are they easy for you to navigate, or are they going to be making those accessible too?
No, so the trap and skeet field is actually pretty good. It's right at the front of the club, right beside the driveway, and the ground is quite hard there, and the grass is very short, so it's not too bad for me to get around. I have no complaints about the trap and skeet side. It's pretty good.
Yeah, soft grass and gravel really sucks when you're in a chair. Cause
definitely.
The wheels don't go too well in the soft gravel.
No, they don't like it.
Sounds like it's a great club.
It sounds excellent.
Yeah.
It's a great location, and like I said, they've been very good to us. So, it's a good relationship.
Now, say if Kelly and I wanted to go there and check out the range ourselves one day, would we have to be members, or as a member of the public, can we just go to the range and just pay a fee and use facilities for the day?
Right. There is that option. There's obviously member-only days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can go on a weekend. Saturdays and Sundays, they're open kind of 9 to 5 or 6, whatever it is. And it's a $25 daily fee.
That's cheap.
Yeah, it's pretty reasonable. Obviously, you'd have the ATT thing to deal with if you want to bring your restricteds.
Right.
You'd have to get your letter of permission or whatnot, but you can bring your rifle or your shotgun and go and rent a bench or shoot some trapper's feet, and yeah, it's no problem at all. And like I said, they've also got a full gun shop there. They have a full stock of ammo, and it's a great spot for the public.
Well, hopefully C-42 comes in and we don't need those right. stupid little invitation letters soon.
Exactly. That's, we'll see how that goes.
That's the Stittsville shooting range on Fernbrook Road?
Yeah, Fernbank.
Fernbank. Yep, sorry. Fernbank.
Yeah, just outside of kind of Ottawa. I guess it is in Ottawa city limits, actually. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, Ottawa's getting bigger.
Ottawa's getting bigger.
Yeah. Stittsville is now considered part of Ottawa.
Yep.
So.
I've only actually been to Ottawa once.
Really?
Yeah, only been there once. I liked it. They're a pretty city.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice in the summer. There's lots of sightseeing to do.
Yeah. Carlton's right downtown, right off Colonel By, right?
No, that's University of Ottawa.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so Carlton is just off of Brownton Avenue. We're kind of isolated in a way. We've got a nice big piece of property, and we're surrounded on two sides by water, by the Rideau Canal on one side and the Rideau River on the other. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, but it's only about a 10-minute drive into downtown core. It's pretty close.
Now, when we were talking pre-show, you mentioned something about one of the school staff members coming back in the fall to shoot with you guys. What was happening there?
Yeah, so I'm not going to be, give too much detail on that for privacy's sake, but just let's say it's a senior staff member at Carlton U. He was quite helpful in a recent issue we had with a couple students taking offense to our club. Everything blew over. We're fine. But it turns out we had a great chat with him, and he may come out to the range with us at some point. I will mention, aside from that, we do have a great relationship with the university officially. At least once a year, we sit down with the head of campus safety.
Excellent.
And kind of give him an update on what's going on, chat about any sort of safety stuff we're doing. Like last year, we launched our pilot program for the safety officer program, which he was really happy to hear about. So yeah, we do have a great relationship with the university.
Well, I think when you take that guy out, you should... covers expenses for the day.
he won't be paying anything for that day.
No range, ammo fee for the day.
we'll just be happy to have him out there, for sure.
It's nice to have somebody up in the staff there supporting you, especially when you've got a group of anti-students. But that's bound to happen in Ottawa. You're going to get... You're in the anti-capital of North America.
Definitely, yeah. Well,
anti-capital of Canada, at least.
Do you find that you might have some positive influence on that? How guns are viewed as students in the Ottawa area?
I think we do. We have a lot of students. What we see is a lot of students come from southern Ontario. So there's a lot of students from especially greater Toronto area. And a lot of them have a negative view of guns. Unfortunately, the news is their main source. So what we've found is that we have a lot of people come out and, usually they don't... Sometimes they do come out on their own and say, hey, I want to try this out. Oftentimes their friends will say, hey, I've been out here last year. I'm second year now and I still go to the club, whatever. So that's helpful. We were also involved with the NFA last year. They hosted an MP shoot east of Ottawa.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, so actually we were flattered. They had us as a kind of a co-host of that. So obviously these are all just positive things, especially when you have a large national organization kind of taking you under their wing.
Was that Sean promoting that with you guys, or?
That was Sean Bevins was promoting that. He was the main NFA host at this event, and we had a great opportunity to chat with people like Solomon Friedman. Got to chat with Sun News and different people like that were there. So And again, we can bring that back, talk to students about it, and it just gives us even more legitimacy, and gives more legitimacy to you know, regular gun owners.
Right. So all positive.
It's all been positive, yeah.
Excellent.
It's been really good.
That's so good to hear. You know, especially in the city, you find it, the schools like Ryerson downtown Toronto, we've got Crazy Wendy as a professor down there.
Yeah.
So in Toronto, the schools really have an anti-gun agenda. So it's nice to see a university in Ontario actually turning the tables and making it a very positive input into the community and in the media. So we think you're doing a great job, Sean.
I appreciate that. We're working hard, and the new exec, Steve Mocha, is president for this year, and I know he's planning great things, so it's going to be a good year for us again.
Excellent. Listen, we really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us tonight.
Yeah.
And I wish you great success, and I hope the trap and the skeet team take off really good for you.
Congratulations
so.
On that.
Yeah, so you're the president of the trap or the skeet league?
So the trap and skeet team is the one team. So, yeah, I'll be the president this year, and yeah, we'll see from now on how it goes.
So you got to get Owen out to shoot some skeets then.
Well, we've had a hard time getting together the last few years. Hopefully, either he gets up here or I get down to his place in the near future.
Well, I was kind of hoping to see him at the charity shoot again this year, but his hands are full with a new baby girl in his life, so we probably won't see him this year.
Yeah, Nikki's keeping pretty busy.
I don't think we'll see much on Slamfire these days, because they homeschool their kids, don't they?
I think so.
Plus, they raise a lot of their own crops and their own livestock, so I'm sure he's a pretty busy man these days.
Yeah, he's got his own business and that, so yeah, he's busy.
Anything you wanted to add, Sean?
No, I don't think so.
Anything to promote? Any events coming up that maybe we could let the students know about?
Event-wise, we're going to be holding events every couple weeks during the summer. And then, in the fall, we'll start off with Club Expo. That'll be the first week of September. And then after that, we'll probably do an event every week for the first month after that. We usually have quite a demand for it. So, but of course, another promotion for the team. This team is starting up, and I think we now have 10 people interested. So, yeah, hopefully we can get this going this year.
Well, hopefully get some sponsorship going too.
Mm-hmm. That'd be helpful. Trap and skeet does add up.
It's very expensive.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. It was actually really interesting to hear what you had to say, and congratulations on starting the new the trap and skeet. And hopefully, actually, you'll have some other teams to compete against within Canada within the next little while.
That would be great.
For sure. Thanks for having me on today. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sean. Have a good night.
Yeah.
And we'll speak to you soon.
Okay, talk to you later.
And we're back. So I'd like to thank Sean for joining us on the show. As you noticed, my voice was rather absent. I was got caught in weather in Ohio, and then a border guard that decided to take an exceptionally long time with every single car, and then I had to pick up my dog, yada yada. So I wasn't able to make the interview last night, so thank you to Tom and Kelly for stepping up and taking care of that. I appreciate that, and I appreciate Sean joining us on the show.
Did you have to go through secondary again?
Yeah.
No.
Did you have a picture this time, or did you have the actual one?
No, we just had passports. I wasn't transporting any firearms, so. No, he was, all the other lines were like maybe 30 seconds per car. Like, they were almost a steady flow, except for ours was like 5 minutes per car. It was just brutal.
So, we have another listener email, actually, from, the same
another
listener.
Michael.
Another Michael letter.
Yeah.
We've got I think all our listeners are named Mike. So, Mike says, and Mike, your timing was impeccable because of all the craziness with my trip and running late. Your email came in this morning and we're doing the main body of the show today. So we got it in this week. So Mike says, hello all. I have a couple of questions that I was hoping you could help me out with. I was wondering if you could explain the difference between buffers in an AR-15 and when to use the various options. Are there any rules of thumb when picking one out? The answer is yes. So moving on, Just kidding. My other questions relate to traveling with restricted firearms. I am going from Ontario to Manitoba to visit family for a few weeks, and thought while I was out there, I may try to shoot a match. I know within Ontario, I just need a letter of invitation, but do not need to get a short-term ATT for going, reading that right?
Out of province.
Do I need to get a short-term ATT for going out of province? Which CFO would I call? Is there a maximum amount of time you can go for, since I will be out there? Oh my goodness, eyes are going.
Old age.
Out there for a few weeks and may only shoot one match while out there. And should/can I get an ATT to my family's place and then another one for each match from their place to the range? Thanks, Mike. And then, in brackets, not the one who blows up 22s, but the one to the maple seed with my wife. But the one going to the maple seed with
my
wife.
Oh, so this isn't the Mike. This is another Mike.
This is a different Mike. This isn't the Mike that he just says. Not the one who blows up 22s.
This is the couple that's going to the maple seed.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, this was the husband and wife. I never did hear back from the other Mike, so I don't know. I hope I didn't offend him and upset
Mike,
him.
Mike, you'll always be known as the one that doesn't blow up 22s.
And then he's got a PS. Thanks for getting the discount at SFRC.
I'll have to take advantage of it.
So,
yeah,
before we get into the answers, that special was actually quite a success. It generated a ton of traffic. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be something that we're going to look at doing again in the future. Maybe try some other retailers. I'm not sure. We'll have to talk to SFRC, see if they're interested in doing something again in the future. But I was quite pleased. It generated a ton of traffic, a lot of buzz.
When I was talking to them, they were quite happy with the exposure they got. So that was great. Thanks, everybody.
So thanks to everybody, and thanks. Thanks to
SFRC.
All these acronyms for doing that for us. That was cool. So
but you still owe Matt $20.
On to no Matt, I'm not giving $20. I will give you 20 Dr. Peppers. Actually, wait,
that's more than $20.
Well, I think he actually ordered it before we did the show. So it's his,
like the day
it's
before.
His fault. He didn't.
I think he said
wait.
Yeah, I think he said the day before. Because when I messaged them, but I just messaged Slamfire on Facebook and said, hey, can you throw this up on your Facebook page? And then I got the reply back, so I had no idea who I was talking to. Apparently it was Mac. He's like, yeah, it would have been great to know this yesterday when I ordered $300 worth of ammo from them. Oopsie. So, and then he talked about it.
Well, next time we do it, we'll let him know ahead of time.
Yeah. So, I think this was the first time for everybody, right? So
it went really well. We had a lot of really positive feedback from it.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Mike's sitting there going, "Okay,
get on with the buffers.
Questions, please. Get on with the show." Yeah. Now, before we get on to that story, Thomas, did we not do a show about this once back around Christmas time?
No, not about the ARs.
Okay, because I thought we've talked about this before. So we may or may not have. So, but let's talk about it now then.
You want me to talk about it, or are you going to talk about it?
Oh, well, you wrote up the answer, so I thought you were going to talk about it.
Well, based
I can take credit for your
answer. I got this online because I am not an AR expert. I was going to contact Ken Kowalski and ask him to explain it to me. But he's busy. He's got schoolwork. But basically, buffers and spring come in two common sizes. They're rifle and carbine length, but really have nothing to do with the length of the barrel. I believe it's a gas system. In a carbine buffer, there are many flavors. Inside normal carbine buffers, there are three cylindrical weights. If they are all steel, it's called carbine. We call it carbine up here, right?
Carbine.
Yeah. If it's a number two, it's steel and one tungsten. And if it's called H1 or 2, it's tungsten plus steel. And H2 is steel and tungsten. So simple enough. There are little little spaces that the weights can shift back and forth. This helps the bolt slam home and prevents bolt bounce. Normal carbine buffers have worked for years. The heavy ones help slow down an action, especially on a full auto. They also help reliability in shorter barrels, like a 10.5. There's also 9mm buffers, which are basically carbine size, but they're also made from solid steel. Which one's right? Basically, they all are. Any of them will work. If the basic one works, then stick with it. Same with the spring. If the normal one works, then why mess it up? But some of this goes back to shooting style. The speed shooters in IPSC or three gun, they want it to cycle fast as possible. So if there are any light buffers, light springs, and even a low mass bolt carrier, all this makes the action go really fast. So if you're going to plan on action shooting, you know, maybe going for the lighter setup might be to your advantage. Meanwhile, the other side want to reduce recoil. So they put the heavier stuff in to reduce the cycle rate. So when you use heavier buffers and springs with pistol calibers, suppressors, short barrels, and the full auto generally go that way. It's one of these things, so there's no right answer, but there are only styles. So Kelly put in, there's a really good link on the website, if you want to go on the website, Mike, and you can go in, there's a YouTube we put in there that gives you a more definite explanation of what the buffers do. So I would suggest go look at this video. It's really, really good, and it'll give you a much better idea than my ramblings. The other part of your question, sorry, Kelly.
I was just going to mention that one, that the YouTube link is specific to AR-15, so I think Mike was actually asking specifically about his AR-15, right?
Yeah, that's what he's asking for.
So the YouTube video is specific to that. So it's got some really good information on it. I watched the whole thing. So
I would check it out. It'd probably give a much better explanation than we can give you, because we're relatively new to ARs ourselves. And to answer your second question, just call the CFO Ontario and ask them for a short-term ATT. Tell them the length of time you're required, the exact location of the range, and a copy of your invite letter. They don't normally ask where you're staying. So usually, like when I get my ATT out to the charity shoot, I usually ask for a week. So whatever residence I'm staying out there, that's my residence while I'm there. They never ask what hotel I'm staying at or where I'm staying. But I would call it, and you call CFO Ontario, not Manitoba, because they're the one that's going to issue the short-term ATT. But they're usually pretty helpful. Like, if you want a short-term, they usually go out of their way to help you. It's only when you're waiting for your long-term that they're a pain in the butt.
And don't be sending any emails saying anybody should be doing nasty stuff.
I tell you, I emailed them on a Saturday for my ATT, my short-term, to go out to New Brunswick, and I got it on the Monday. So they're pretty quick that way, because the long-terms go through the clubs. So hopefully when this common sense actually happens, we won't have to worry about that. But give us the CFO call, and they're very friendly. They'll go out of the way to help you, and they'll tell you what information they require. But the one thing they do want, the exact location. So if you don't have a numerical address for the range, because some of these ranges technically don't, a rail route doesn't usually suffice. But if you get a GPS coordinate, that's just as good too.
Yeah. I know that some of them ask for, I'm thinking back about the charity shoot, they were looking for also route that you were going to be taking as well.
I know they're asking Sticks when he's, because he's coming from the States, they wanted an itinerary what he was doing.
Yep.
They've never asked me for any short-term ATT I've applied for.
Okay.
But they might.
They might.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. So we also have something else coming here. There's Shoot for a Cure. Did you want to take that, Carrie? Kelly?
Sure.
I called you Carrie.
I don't know where Carrie came from, but okay.
Take it away, Beth.
Ron, Stacy.
Yes. Okay, so it's at the Barry Gun Club. So it's the second annual Shoot for a Cure, with the proceeds going to the Huronia. I'm stumbling over my words today. Huronia, Ride for Dad's Fight Against Prostate Cancer. So it's on June 27th. So if you're not going to the charity shoot, go to this, because this would be a great cause to support. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it says, bring cash. So there's going to be a charity barbecue. So all the proceeds go to the prostate cancer research. And you can try your hand at handgun shooting at the indoor range. They are tactical type rifles on the outdoor range. And you can do skeet shooting too. Woo! We talked about skeet. skeet shooting today in that interview, didn't we?
Yep.
So, or action shotgun with metal targets. And it's all supervised by our friendly, knowledgeable, and safe instructors, and the cost is $40 per person. Additional donations are always welcome, you know that. So, and you don't need experience to go. So if you want to go, you can actually get more information at the www.shootforacure.ca. We'll post that on our website and on our Facebook page and that as well. And it's sponsored by Winchester, so we have to say thank you to them as well.
Excellent. If you've never been to the Barry Gun Club, it's a really nice facility. That's where I took my black badge course a couple years ago. It's a nice range. You'd enjoy it.
I've never been, so I'll have to go.
So any shout-outs, George?
Sorry, I was on mute.
He always does that. He's updating the notes, and he mutes us. And
then we bring him back in.
My shout-outs were pretty much done in what I did with guns, so I won't tie up too much more time. I cannot say enough about the hospitality of Red and Brian and Red's family. Just, they're my shout-out. And, I guess I'm going to add another shout-out to Mike, not the one that blows up 22s. We all got a good chuckle out of that, so... And I will see you at, I'll get to meet you at the Maple Seed.
And Kelly.
And, you get,
You'll be forever known as the mic that doesn't blow 22s. Yeah.
I've got one shout out, of course, to SFRC for having my Vortex Spark in stock and shipping it so quickly, because I looked around and nobody around here has them in stock. And I thought everybody was back ordered, because I tried 5 or 6 different local shops, and I just got disappointed, and I figured I'd have to wait and wait and wait. And when we did the special, I went and looked on their website, and they actually had them in stock. So thank you, guys.
They have a lot of them in stock. So I have a shout-out to both Andrew and Amanda. They were who I shot with on Sunday at the range. It was nice to see a father and daughter team out shooting, and they had a great time. It was great to actually share the range with them. They were very nice and very accommodating, and a big thank you to Andrew for letting me shoot his guns, and talking to Amanda and getting to know her a little bit, and also Andrew. He gave me a couple of tips on how to actually adjust my grip so with my Beretta, so I'm a little bit more comfortable. So that was awesome.
Excellent. And actually, Kevin said he really liked shooting that guy's Glock. He said he shot some really good groups with his light trigger.
Yeah, it was really good, but he's looking to use the Glock for IPSC, and he can't adjust it to... It was a 3.5-pound trigger that he had put on his Glock, and... that's too light for it. So.
Well, yeah, for production. He can polish the parts, but I think he's got to keep the trigger pull at 5 pounds or above. So
yeah, he does.
But he can shoot production.
Yeah.
Or not standard division, but he wants to shoot production. So
right. Or he can sell the Glock to me.
And the girlfriend discount.
Yes.
Plus 10%.
I do his laundry, so maybe he'll give me a good discount.
It should be free then. Yeah. You feed him too?
Yeah, actually. Well, we go out a lot when he's here, but yeah. Okay. Although I made a great barbecue on Saturday. It was awesome.
Oh, that's
okay. Fun. So, any closing comments, you guys?
No, I'm good.
You're good?
I can't think of anything right now. The caffeine has worn off.
I noticed that you're speaking slower.
I gotta work tomorrow, so usually if it was Sunday, I'd be going right through it. I gotta work earlier tomorrow, so I didn't have as much coffee tonight.
There you go. Alright, well, I think we'll close her down, and I will do my greatest best attempt to get this posted tonight.
Okay. Oh, I did have one thing for closing comments.
Okay.
Alright, so we're actually going to put up another survey on the Facebook page. It's all about what you're going to be... It's Father's Day next week, right? Or this Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday, isn't it? Yep.
Yeah, it's coming up. So let's see what you're going to be doing for Father's Day and maybe what you might like to have as your gift for Father's Day. So that's our survey this week.
Okay, beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome. Okay. And until next time, Keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoke.
And take a kid shooting.
And I got nothing.
Got ammo.
Yeah.
That, why'd you go and do that? I gotta edit that out.
No, you don't.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca, and please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
God made the animals, and God made the trees. God made you, well, hell, he even made me. He gave me this voice so I could be a singer. So you tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns.
Thomas is going to put in the corner.
I'm sorry.
We did so well. No giggles.
I like the giggles.
They're awesome. So I did find out information about the 44 and the Colt 45.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So the biggest difference is because the 45 has a larger barrel, and it's got less velocity. So you might, if you want something with a little bit higher power, you go with 44 mag, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So... And, yeah, so the recommendation is not to actually top load to the 44 caliber if you're going to...
Really? Yeah. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Or else I'll be forever known as the George that blows up 45s.
Well, also, the 44 itself, the Model 29, was specifically designed with a beefed-up frame to handle the 44s. Like you,
so essentially, they created the 44s just because they wanted a higher velocity.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm.